Podtacular 364, scrapped for April 30th, 2013.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Dust Storm.
And I'm your other host, Brent Gamer.
And we are here today to talk about an article that got released last week that kind of had the whole Halo community raging for a little while. There was an article that got posted over on Gamma Sutra, and it's stirred quite a few discussions and tensions amongst members of the Halo community. And people have already posted comments and YouTube videos, Twitter feedback, Facebook posts about them. And we just kind of wanted to take time to give our two cents on what we thought about the article and kind of what we think it means for the future of the Halo universe and the franchise as it currently stands, and just kind of wanted to get our opinions out there before the news kind of went cold. So this is done impromptu kind of thing. We decided to do this just today. So for those that normally attend via live stream, sorry it's happened short notice, but we decided we wanted to kind of go ahead and do a show about this before we did our next show to cover the bulletin, so we didn't really get those two things kind of mixed up. So that's why we're here. We're going to talk about the article and talk about our thoughts and opinions on it. So this was an article posted on Gamma Sutra, which I haven't heard about it before, but I've never read it. It's a magazine kind of devoted to art and business behind gaming. So there's quite a bit of information in the article for this behind the development of Halo 4, kind of from its inception of when it was being transferred from Bungie over to 343 to the development process as the team began to be pulled together and the design decisions that they made throughout their whole development process. I've only been able to read through it once just because of me being busy with other things, and Brent, I think, is a little bit more knowledgeable. So, Brent, I'm going to kind of have you run the show a little bit, and I'll kind of throw my two cents in. But let's just go ahead and start with the beginning.
All right. So, this is an article from Gamma Sutra, like you said earlier. Gamma Sutra is more aimed towards game developers than gamers, really. Like most sites like 1UP or Giant Bomb or Game Shack, things like that, they generally tend to be geared towards the gamer instead of actually people who make games, but Gamma Sutra is the opposite. So reading a Gamma Sutra article usually will give you a little bit more insight into the actual development process of a game than maybe an article from one of those sites I said earlier. Mm-hmm. Chris Graft, I've heard the name before. I think he's worked for 1UP before, maybe, possibly, but I'm not real sure, so I don't want to say for positive he has. Kind of in first of all, the article is named Making Halo 4, A Story About AAA. And Halo 4 is a AAA title. Some people use the term quadruple A for like the biggest titles on a system, and Halo's definitely probably the biggest franchise on Xbox right now. As far as exclusive.
Well, okay.
Well, I mean, yeah, exclusive. Exclusive franchises.
Right. Right.
So, mainly this article kind of starts out, it seems a little mean on Chris Graft's part. Like, I don't want to call it real mean, but it seems like Chris Graft doesn't really like the idea of quadruple A titles as opposed to maybe independently developed games like Fez or things like that. Like, in the first paragraph of the article, he goes on to talk about how the gaming industry changed in 2012 and indie studios kind of rose to prominence, and you got things like Fez and Braid and other titles like that.
Walking Dead was a big one.
Yeah.
And one game of the year.
Telltale really isn't an independent studio, though, if you think about it. I mean, they've been around for a while. I've played Telltale games ever. I can remember when Telltale didn't make the kind of games that they did now, but...
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking more smaller studio than independent.
I mean, it's smaller, but it's not independent like I think of maybe Polytron, who made Fez, or something like that.
Okay.
Whatever Jonathan Blow's studio is. Do you know what he calls his studio, or is it?
I don't know.
The guy who made Braid, basically, is one-man team.
Okay.
So, things like that. Those are different. Like, there's small studios, and then there's independent developers. And Chris Kraft was kind of talking about how he preferred maybe independent developers to this process. He didn't say it specifically, but you can kind of tell in the tone of the article in the first few paragraphs that he's not a real big fan of the AAA development process, maybe. But then he goes on to interview possibly the biggest exclusive, you know, video game developer that Microsoft has, 343 Industries. He starts out by talking to Josh Holmes, who is the creative director at 343. They go through his kind of past. At first, he was a tester at EA. Then he moved on to make NBA Street and later Def Jam Vendetta, which was kind of a rap star wrestling style game that he admits that he really didn't want to make, but kind of the marketing team that worked at EA at the time made him do it. So you kind of get an idea of where he was at when he joined 343 at the time. He also made Turok, the 2008 game, not the original N64 classic. A lot of people were kind of turned off by that Turok reboot. Some people said it wasn't as fun as the originals. Really, I mean, the original kind of caught lightning in a bottle at a time when first-person shooters were extremely novel on home consoles. That was back in the days of GoldenEye and Perfect Dark Zero back on N64. I don't think that people really enjoyed Turok as much as they just remember enjoying shooting dinosaurs, which is definitely cool, but you know, nowadays when game mechanics are extremely advanced as opposed to back in those 32-bit console days, doesn't really hold up that well. So they kind of tell how Josh Holmes came to 343. It's not really that interesting. They talk about his experience with Halo prior to coming in at 343. He says that Halo was one of the first titles that, or it was the first title that convinced him that shooters could work on a console.
I think that goes for a lot of people in the gaming industry. If you talk to a lot of people, Halo was the thing that I think in most people's minds made first-person shooters possible on the console.
Yeah.
If you talk to a lot of game developers out there, I think most of them agree to that.
At least from what I've heard, fans who would throw up GoldenEye 007 and say, "Hey, look, this happened 5 years earlier or whatever."
But even that was.
It was rudimentary at the time.
Yeah.
They didn't have twin sticks back then. You had to use the directional yellow buttons and the analog stick at the same time to get that FPS effect. So it didn't work that well, but.
And it was clunky.
A lot of people, for a lot of people that didn't like GoldenEye 007, Halo was the game that convinced them that FPSs could, in fact, work on consoles. I think a big part of that really was the dual analog stick. Xbox had that, PS2 had it. I don't think GameCube did. They kind of had it because the directional yellow buttons, the C-pad or whatever they call it, it was kind of like a stick, but it wasn't really an analog stick. Like, it only had 8 directions. So it was kind of rudimentary. But the PS2 and the Xbox did, in fact, have dual sticks, so you could get that really smooth reticule transition that you want in an FPS game. So Halo was one of the first that would show off that could happen successfully in a console. And, you know, now in 2012, FPSs are basically the only games that, you know, get released to huge success. Even one of the games that we consider one of our art titles as an industry is, you know, Bioshock Infinite, and that's a first-person shooter. But Halo kind of, at the time, it was innovative because it wasn't just a first-person shooter. It also had things like regenerative health shields, which, you know, weren't around at the time. The idea of having a shield that you could kind of duck around a corner and hide and regenerate over time really revolutionized that FPS multiplayer experience at the time, and that's why people love Halo nowadays. I can imagine, you know, they took that out in ODST to a certain extent, and that wasn't even really multiplayer except for Firefight. It certainly wasn't player versus player, but,
right.
You know, the idea of having a Halo game without shields that regenerate is like heretical. You know, it's sacrilege as far as the core game mechanics of Halo go. So yeah.
It didn't exactly.
One of the first things that it ended up kind of really showing off at the time. And Josh Holmes picked up on that. So that kind of gave me a little bit of hope, you know, at the very beginning of the article. And then it goes on to kind of ruin my hope the more I read on. At one point in the article, they even, you know, say a quote that at one point I actually considered not reading the rest of the article. It angered me so much, not really angered, but kind of disappointed me. It disappointed me in the way that I kind of perceived the attitude of that studio of 343 before I came into the article. And then afterwards,
I think I know which part you're talking about too.
Yeah.
And it's just to see how they really kind of, there's a fine line between like mistreating the Halo franchise and just having to build a team from scratch, and we'll get to it in bigger detail once we actually get to those parts of the article. But it's almost like they really didn't realize that the fact that they had this new group of people working together, it still drastically affects the end product, and I think they kind of missed some key things because of that.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about more, but go on, Brent.
So in the second page of the article, they go on to interview Frank O'Connor, who we all know as Frankie. They give his past. He worked at Official Xbox Magazine until 2003 when he joined Bungie. A lot of the people will remember that in the Halo 2 days, kind of nearing the end of Halo 2's development, he gave out the Bungie weekly updates. So that kind of ingrained him into the minds of Halo fans as kind of a Halo guy, you know. That's kind of the man who
kind of understands
it, kind of the ombudsman between the gamer and the studio, you know. He was the man who would kind of transfer information from the studio to the fans. He was the middleman. BS Angel would go on to take on what was essentially his job back in the Halo 2 days.
Right.
He did back in the Halo 2 days what BS Angel does now with the Halo Waypoint updates.
Right, the bulletins, yep.
Yeah. So they go through his kind of past with Halo, and they say that he was more loyal to Halo as a franchise than he was to Bungie as a studio. And I mean, that was really true, because he wasn't really a part of... He didn't join Bungie because he was a Bungie fan, necessarily. He joined Bungie because he worked at Official Xbox Magazine at the time, and he was a huge fan of Halo. That was documented even before he joined Bungie. And after he got the opportunity to come in and actually work on Halo, he took it. But he's definitely a Halo man. He's not really a Bungie man.
Bungie man!
Yes, Bungie man! I think people kind of understood that. If you had any idea of kind of Frank's kind of succession through his career, and you know, from magazine editor to Bungie, kind of, I don't really know his job title at Bungie. I think he was maybe a creative executive, possibly. He had access to Story Bible. So O'Connor is the man who right now has more information about the Halo franchise than anybody else on the planet. I mean, even he can create things that become canonical in the Halo universe. So he's kind of important. I've always liked Frankie. I've liked his attitude. He's kind of a carefree guy. Like, he doesn't take his role too seriously, but at the same time, he understands that there's a certain, I don't know how to say it, like a certain reverence that people have for a well-defined and well-kept narrative. And so he makes sure that the Halo narrative stays in line with previous entries into that universe. So as far as people who kind of keep Halo's story in line, Frank is kind of at the forefront of that. He's the man who either kind of confirms or denies what goes into the Halo story. That part of the article really wasn't that bothersome. Then they go on to talk to Kiki Wolfkill, who sounds like less of a Halo fan and more of somebody who worked at Microsoft at the time, who understood how to manage a studio that was large enough to make a AAA title on the caliber of Halo. And you definitely need that. You need somebody with experience who can keep everybody together and make a game this big using as much cash as they had available to them. You know, Halo 4 was not at all a small endeavor. It's definitely a quadruple A title, as hardcore gamers call them.
Right.
They used millions of dollars to create it, and, you know, possibly thousands of people. So they talked to Kiki. I really kind of drifted off at that point in the article. Like, I'm not saying Kiki Wolfkill's uninteresting. I'm just saying she doesn't sound like as much of a Halo fan as possibly Josh Holmes or BS Angel or
Frankie.
You know, Frank O'Connor. Oh, obviously, Frankie.
I mean, Frank's the biggest fan, really, if you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, imagine being a fan who can create your own stories within the Halo universe that then go on to become canonical. Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I know fans who would kill for that opportunity. Imagine if Halo Fan for Life, you know, finally got his hands on the will as far as determining where the Halo story went.
He's in the chat room right now, too, so.
Yeah, that's why I said it, you know, I mean, it's funny. But, so Kiki's more of a managerial figure within 343, and that's fine, you know, they need that. Moving on to kind of one of the quotes that messed with people, I'm just going to read it off.
Yeah, there are like two or three quotes that really mess with people, and I think you Skyped them to me, I think you hit every single one, so.
The first one kind of in that article says, "There was inefficient prototyping. The team didn't clearly define and communicate the parameters of successful prototypes early enough in development, which slowed the process. The team also started to realize that Halo 4's narrative, rooted in volumes of sci-fi lore, was at times too inside baseball and wasn't self-contained enough. It was an accessibility issue that needed to be addressed."
And this is actually something that, just before you start to dive into it, it was actually something that Josh Holmes talked about during the GDC panel. And we touched on the whole, I think they brought out, or he brought out specifically when they were prototyping the Promethean and when they were actually trying to focus on how to design it. But then there are certain aspects where when you actually went to think about the game as a whole, people got too narrow-minded on the Prometheans. And then when they took a step back, it's like, oh, we have to account for these other things in here. We have to go back to the drawing board. And I think that touches or is included somewhat in this quote. At least I feel that those two are kind of connected that way.
Well, to me, the quote itself isn't bothersome. You know, I mean, if you find that your narrative is too fixed to the novels and the graphic novels and the anime and all this other things that, you know, Halo's traveled into transmedia product with, I don't have a problem with that. You know, I've always wanted more story packed into the games rather than the multimedia. But to me, it was kind of a hypocritical statement because they say that it's too inside baseball, and then they proceed to make a game where the main antagonist, the Didact, you had to read the novels to have basically any kind of clue as to who he is as a person. You know, what are his motivations? Where did he come from? You know, what are the Forerunners? I mean, they came out with the Greg Bear novels to address that, but if you're going to say that the narrative isn't contained enough within the games, and then you go and give me a bad guy that I really don't have any clue about if I didn't read those Greg Bear novels, that's inside baseball. That's exactly what you said you didn't want to do.
Right. I think back to Halo 1 where we saw the introduction of the Flood, and it was pulled out in such a way where it was like it was completely unknown the first time you went in there, but the rest of the game you had Guilty Spark explaining what the Flood was and what the Forerunners did to prevent the Flood from spreading, so you actually got part of that history of the Flood within the game, even though up at front you had no idea what the Flood was. But in Halo 4 we have absolutely no idea who the Didact is. For those who haven't read the books, you have no idea what this being is, whether Forerunner or whatever race you may think might be in Halo, and there's nothing that goes on to explain afterwards. Even the short time with the Librarian didn't really explain the Didact in great detail.
Yeah, so I mean, it's kind of an issue of Kiki saying one thing and acknowledging that was a problem with the game and saying that they tried to fix it, and then doing the complete opposite. You know, I mean, it's it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And that's not really even the most egregious quote that...
No.
I mean, none of these quotes are really egregious, but I mean, some of these quotes really kind of sparked off an outrage within the Halo community that sparked... I mean, that's the reason we're recording on a Tuesday instead of a Thursday.
Yeah. Or we're recording on Tuesday and Thursday, but...
Yeah, I mean, we are, but I'm saying we've skipped two extra days early to give you an extra episode about this article because it kind of incited a fury in the Halo community that we haven't seen in a while. I think a lot of people disliked Halo 4 and they were just waiting for like some sort of proof from 343 that, you know, kind of gave some justification for their anger. I don't know if that's kind of what happened here, but it seems like it. moving on to the third page of the article, even the byline for the third page says, "We hired people who hated Halo."
Yeah, this was
the first thing
that Twitter just went on an outrage about, because this was in big bold letters. There's another line in here that's not one of the subtitle things that other people blew up about once they found that one, but this one was the first thing that really blew everything out of proportion.
Yeah, I mean, because it's such a crazy quote. As far as kind of what you expected from 343 Industries, we've always said that we were proud of 343 Industries for hiring people who loved Halo, who were Halo fans. And we get that with BS Angel and Frank O'Connor and, you know, maybe Josh Holmes. Some people are really mad at Josh Holmes. They feel like he is a creative director who hates his own games community. I've heard that people feel he's kind of condescending to the community in a way. And you can kind of get a feel out of that. I don't know enough about the man. I haven't read enough from him to get that sense. But, I mean, after this article and the GDC discussion he did, I can see maybe somebody getting that idea. But the idea that they purposely hired people who hated Halo for certain reasons, and I'll go on and read the full quote so that people get that full context. It kind of messed people up. I'll go ahead and read it. It says, I didn't even pull it up on the show notes. It's sad. I was like, this is like one of the biggest. Did I have it on the show notes?
No, you didn't.
No. This is a big one too, which surprises me. The full quote said, "We had people who we hired who hated Halo because of X," says O'Connor. "But what that really meant was, I feel like this game could be awesome because of Y input that I'm going to bring into it. I want to prove it, and I'm passionate about proving it. So we ended up with a bunch of people who were genuinely passionate about the product. This is a huge advantage, and that helped in hiring and forming our team." So basically he's saying that when they went through the process of screening interviewees for 343 Industries, they found people who hated Halo for certain reasons, you know, possibly certain game mechanics, and they hired them specifically so they could go in and change those mechanics. And a lot of people kind of took offense to that because at its very core, Halo, as far as game mechanics goes, is a very well-defined and balanced set of game rules. Even at like the very basest form of game theory, as far as understanding, you know, video game development and how mechanics work with each other, Halo is very pure. They've talked about the Golden Triangle before. We've talked about it before time and time again. The idea that you have grenades to take shields down. Everybody has shields, so you can't just shoot them and kill them instantly. So you need to throw a grenade at somebody, take their shields down, then use your weapon to get a headshot specifically to kill them in one shot. Or if you're close enough, you can use melee, which has substantially more damage than just a weapon by its own, possibly not as much as a grenade. It's probably equal to a grenade's damage. And it just that kind of, that set of rules between what are the distances between the players? What kind of tools do they have available to them? Like, do they have grenades? Do they have stickies? Do they have frags? And what kind of weapon do they have in their hands? Like, all of those rules work very closely to make an extremely balanced game. And that's why Halo's multiplayer is extremely popular. And I think a lot of people took offense because they envisioned this quote as saying, okay, we found people who maybe didn't like grenades, so they wanted to put bolt shots in. And they didn't like, you know, recharging shields, so, you know, we put in this worthless pulse grenade that people don't use. Like, You know, just crazy stuff that made Halo 4, in their eyes, less of a game than the prior Halos. Halos 1, 2, 3, and possibly Reach. On NeoGAF, there's an ongoing debate as to whether Reach or Halo 4 is the worst game. I really couldn't say either way, because I've really enjoyed Halo 4 and Halo Reach. Like, to say one game is worse than the other is to somehow say that both teams were the same, and they're not. You know, the development teams were completely different.
Right.
Bungie's team has worked together for a decade and a half now, and 343 had to throw together a team in 6 months so they could, you know, push a game out of the door in a year and a half. So you're obviously going to have a disadvantage if you're on the 343 team than you are on the Bungie team. I think that's something for Halo fans to remember as they're reading this article. 343 is not Bungie. Bungie has been around for a long time. Bungie has its own development culture. I mean, they understand the way that they will do things. And they really don't kind of deviate, you know, kind of swerve away from that direction as they make different games. It's the same throughout the years. But 343 had to come up with something completely new. They had to come up with a way of developing games, their own way, their own process of development, which took time. And they even in the beginning of this article state that while they were building a team, they encountered a number of mistakes that, because of their time constraint, because Microsoft said, you have to get this game out by now, you know, I mean, they had to just go with those mistakes and learn from them instead of really getting around to fixing them. So in a way, 343 is in this hard, like they are between a rock and a hard place.
Right.
The rock
and,
is
I mean,
the
they
Halo
have,
fan who doesn't yeah, want to change.
And they
the
have
hard
Mother
place
Microsoft
is Microsoft
over. Yep, exactly. Yeah. Microsoft.
So, I mean, Microsoft is obviously the harder place than the rock. You can push the rock, but
yeah,
Microsoft's
like Microsoft's a mountain for crying out loud.
So, I mean, you have to do what Microsoft tells you to do when you work for an internal studio at Microsoft. You could probably attribute that to Rare's downfall as a company. Back in the Super Nintendo and N64 days, Rare was beloved. They made Donkey Kong Country. They made Conker's Bad Fur Day. They made Perfect Dark. They made, you know, any number of other great, you know, N64 titles. Like, I think they made
Perfect Dark was a good
Jet
one.
Force Gemini. A lot of the beloved N64 titles were made by Rare, and then Microsoft bought Rare. That's how they got Banjo-Kazooie on Xbox Live, you know, 10 years after its release. But they really changed that studio. Like, you didn't get Banjo-Kazooie. You didn't get all of these amazing games that Rare was making for Nintendo, because a lot of people say that Microsoft didn't give them the same creative freedom and development time that they needed as, you know, Nintendo gave them. Really, the only game I can think of that I've enjoyed from Rare working for Microsoft is Viva Pinata. And I mean, a lot of people call that a kid's game. You could say Banjo-Kazooie was a kid's game, but people still love that. But
Banjo-Kazooie,
it's the idea that Microsoft makes their internal developers give up a certain amount of creative freedom in exchange for vast amounts of, you know, monetary resources. So I wouldn't hate on 343 too much. 343 is not Bungie. People need to quit thinking that 343 is the next Bungie.
No, it's not. But again, from conversations that we've had in the past, you can't really go into something as big as Halo 4 and just completely be okay with mistakes. And we'll get to the whole mistakes thing a little bit later. I kind of jumped ahead on that. But you can't bring people in that... to this quote that hate Halo just because you want to get a different kind of perspective on it. I mean, it's nice to have those opinions be flowing in, but do you really want those kind of people working on the game? I mean, yeah, having that input is valuable. Don't mistake me for that. It's valuable input, but you don't want people actively working on a game who aren't passionate about Halo.
Well, and what made people mad was that these people intentionally supposedly hated parts of Halo that they wanted to go in and actually change. If you had just said that, like, maybe some of your team wasn't really that interested in Halo, I don't think people would have been as mad as they were when you said, yeah, these people hated this part of Halo, and they don't even really go into specifics as to what those people hated. And they just went in and changed things that we're not going to discuss. That made people mad. Like, even if you had said, like, oh, okay, this part of Halo we found wanting, so we hired this person who came in and kind of fixed that, like, that would have been better. But they didn't do that, so.
Yeah. There's just a couple other things just about the whole people who hated Halo that just kind of irks me, but, I mean, we already covered them. It's just some of the things that they did in terms of building up their studio after reading this article just seems kind of, what were you thinking? Were you in your right mind? Were you high or something? I mean, some of these decisions that they made regarding hiring some people just didn't seem quite the right way to do things. And I understand for hiring AAA employees from other AAA studios. I get that you want the best team there, but that doesn't mean you go and discount people out in the industry who aren't necessarily AAA, because there are other people that don't necessarily work on those high-end studios that have great ideas and can be very beneficial to the team. I mean, yeah. You don't want to restrict yourself to the best of the best, because you're not always going to get, you're going to get some kind of subset of a game. But I feel that if you get some of those other people in there, even get some new talent to the gaming industry, get someone who's only been doing stuff for maybe 3 or 4 years, let them build up their career in Halo, let them bring in maybe some of those unique ideas that they have and enhance the experience that way. Don't rely on all these AAA titles who probably have somewhat of a similar mindset in terms of making great games, because you want those little gems that can be brought in that's not necessarily of or the already purified form. Get some of that roughage in there and to make something new.
Well, yeah, I mean, how many college grads, you know, grew up playing Halo and learned FPS game theory from that? You know, I mean, those are the kind of players or kind of developers I would want making my game. It seems to me like it would make more sense to get new talent that hasn't been tested rather than kind of talent bases from other developers who really didn't like this game that we're working on and want to come in and change things around to their liking. because when you're dealing with something like Halo, which is very beloved as far as its game mechanics, I mean, you could say that Halo's multiplayer is loved for other reasons. Like, you could say people love Halo multiplayer because it's sci-fi and they get to use guns that they don't see in real life. Well, that's not real because, you know, there's other sci-fi style first-person shooters that, you know, have cooler, you know, in the objectively thinking weapons than Halo does, but that's not why people come into Halo. Like, I mean, Halo 4 is sci-fi, but it doesn't attract a large science fiction fan base, really. You could say that the reason people liked it was because it was one of the first, you know, FPSs on Xbox Live that really worked well. And, I mean, that's true, but people were playing Halo at a time when they also could have been playing first-person shooters on their PC, and a lot of people enjoyed Halo better, you know, even on the Xbox because of its game mechanics. So, I mean, it all comes back to the purity of those game mechanics and understanding that that is a part of Halo that you really can't mess with very much. And if you want to go about changing everything about Halo, you're going to make a game that the base you have right now, the fan base that will buy Halo, you won't enjoy it. I mean, we're going to buy Halo no matter what, but if you make Halo 5 like the worst game on the planet and you didn't tell me about it and you didn't show me anything about it, I'm still going to buy the game, but I'm not going to enjoy it. And, you know, I might not buy Halo 6. You know.
Well, I have a feeling that's not quite extreme right now with Halo 4, but some people think with Halo 4, with how badly it got received, that audience isn't going to be there for Halo 5. And yeah, I think 343 has this kind of one kind of grace period game, but if they mess up Halo 5, Halo is going to be done as a franchise, in my opinion.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Or a AAA franchise.
Like, I can't say for sure because I'm not a fortune teller. I mean, I can't look into the future and tell you what Halo 5 is going to be like, but just from the backlash that a large part of the Halo community has had against Halo 4, and I mean, it's not like they hate Halo 4. Halo 4 is not the Snake's Revenge of the Halo franchise. Like, it's objectively, in a lot of gamers' minds, probably the worst Halo in the franchise, but it's not a terrible game. Like, it's not a game where you can look at and be like, man, that was just, like, I'm used to eating steak and you just, you know, took something out of the garbage can and threw it on a plate. Like, this ain't working, you know? I mean, it wasn't like that. It was more like you changed these little teeny features that ended up being really important to the Halo multiplayer game mechanics, and so I didn't like it as much.
Right.
But...
well, there were some parts that were even just missing.
Yeah. And, I mean, now that they are a fully developed studio,
they have the staff now. They're not going out and finding people to fill in spots.
They are realized as a studio. They are
right.
Set. They have a fully working staff of people working on Halo now who have met each other. They know each other. They've known each other for, you know, however long 343 has been around now. A couple years, 3 years. They
Brent?
It's going to be...
Brent, you're cutting out.
Assuming... I'm sorry.
Brent, you're cutting out.
Oh. All right. Hello?
Okay.
All right. Is that better?
Yeah. You're just like, it was dropping just for a second.
Yeah, I think it's my Wi-Fi. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Yeah, just back up, start that sentence again.
So, really, as a studio, they are more equipped to make Halo 5 a much better game than Halo 4. They don't have to spend as much time hiring, and now they can spend time developing. And especially now that they have all of this feedback, now whether or not they decide to use that feedback is their decision, but I mean, if I was making a Halo game, I would take major fan feedback into consideration when making a new title.
And you kind of have to, even as I would think the new studio part is where that even plays an even more important role in getting community feedback.
Yeah.
And everyone complains that there wasn't a beta. Everybody does. And in reality, just with how I understand from reading the article where they said they were already like limited on resources and with how they managed their staff, it just didn't really allow for a beta to be produced and maintained and evaluated. But you would think with a title as big as Halo, when you have a new studio coming on, you definitely want that community feedback. So when the game does get produced and get launched, that you won't have this big outcry or pushback from the community that the game sucks or that they don't like multiple aspects because there was something that was there before that, from their best judgment, as a new studio handling Halo for the first time, they thought was not necessary.
Right. They need to understand that keeping their core audience happy is essential to their game's image. I'm not going to say that it's essential to their sales, because there are a lot of games that have a huge, well, not a huge following. They have a very dedicated following that don't sell a lot of titles. But those people play that game over and over and over again. Halo is kind of in between that. There is a set of fans who love Halo like us, and they'll love it probably irrationally to the point where we would buy Halo titles over and over and over again, just, you know, due to our past with the franchise and our love of that universe, that even if subsequent games came out that weren't really to the quality of Halo's 1, 2, 3, and maybe Reach, we'd still buy them, you know, from any developer, assuming it was, you know, decent. And then you have this set of fans who have never played a Halo game before, and that's kind of who 343 wanted to reach with Halo 4. And so they kind of added elements of Call of Duty that really only a Call of Duty fan would like, but they also forgot that Halo and Call of Duty are different thematically too. I mean, the Call of Duty fan likes modern military stuff. They like modern military guns. They like weapons that they can actually, you know, go to Texas and purchase from a firearms dealer today. you know, I mean,
yeah.
that's traditionally the kind of hardcore Call of Duty fan I've come upon. Halo is different. Halo has fake weapons in a sci-fi universe that will never exist ever. Whereas Call of Duty, you know, tries to pawn itself off as realistic as modern military goes.
Yeah, it's not even realistic.
No, it's not. But
not by a long shot.
But they do use realistic guns. I mean, I don't know if some of the new ones have guns that don't exist anymore, but most of the guns I've encountered in the Call of Duty franchise are all real. Whereas Halo
guns
aren't. Even the Halo style of combat, like the idea of regenerating shields, like that doesn't happen in real life. Like you get shot in the head once in real life, you're dead. It's a completely different style of game from the realistic style that Call of Duty has. So taking features from a game like Call of Duty that tries to be realistic with, you know, a very small amount of health with each player that, you know, if you shoot them in the head once they're dead, that's not necessarily going to work in a game where people have regenerating shields and, you know, where a triad of grenades, melee, and weaponry has a very special place within the mechanics of that game. Like, it just doesn't work. It would be like taking, you know, Mario-style platforming and making Halo adapt to that. Like, it doesn't make sense. They're different styles of games. They really wanted that Call of Duty crowd, though. I think in a way they were almost jealous of Call of Duty's success as far as stealing away what was originally Halo's domain. Like, if you wanted to play a first-person shooter on Xbox, you played Halo. Well, not anymore. It's Call of Duty's domain, but...
Yeah.
I mean, well,
And there's other games in the space now where when Halo came out, that was it. And Halo 2, when it came out, that was kind of it. There were other first-person shooters, but Halo still had the market dominating there. And then when you had the Xbox 360 came out, you had Gears that came out, you had Call of Duty 4, Modern Warfare that came out, Battlefield eventually came to the console, you had Medal of Honor that's there as well. So now it's just, there's a bunch of these high-quality first-person shooters, and there's now a variety of shooters out there. And while it's important to kind of develop and integrate some other features into Halo, you still have to think about what makes Halo multiplayer Halo multiplayer. What's that core set of features that really people attach to and love about the multiplayer? And it seems like for Halo 4, that core kind of crumbled a little bit and broke up into some new pieces being added on to kind of fix things, and some pieces just kind of fell off and got blown away in the wind.
Like, I'm still waiting on a Spartan 4 to scream, "Yeah, we're Oscar Mike!"
But, I mean, a big part of it is balance in the Halo 4 multiplayer. You have the balance of the weapons, you have the balance of the vehicles. I mean, everybody talks about the bolt shot, how you basically have a shotgun in your back pocket. That is not balanced by any means necessary.
I mean, I wish I could just, you know, straight up spawn with a shotgun. That would be more enjoyable for me. Like, I mean, if people are going to get shotguns, might as well go all the way.
Yeah.
Just take melee out of the equation completely. You know, whatever.
Yeah. But, I mean, melee is part of that.
That's what I'm saying.
Golden triangle.
Yeah,
it's,
I love
it. It's melees, like, grenades, shot, and guns. Guns, grenade, melee.
Yeah. Yeah, but 343 has obviously shown that they don't care about that. But, I mean, you know, looking back at Halo now, I think that fans have identified that Halo's multiplayer elements even extend farther than that golden triad that they talked about. Like, looking back, things like weapon placement on maps, you know, spawning with the same weapons every time, you know, non-instant respawn times, things like that were very kind of unique to Halo and made Halo what it was. It wasn't just the Golden Triangle. Like, the Golden Triangle might be the biggest thing that separates Halo from other FPSs, but it's not the only thing. And when 343 went around to changing Halo for Halo 4, they kind of messed with some of those things that people weren't aware that they enjoyed. Kind of one of those things where you don't know what you got till it's gone.
Right. And it's just been, I don't know, it's been a lot of coming to terms with the community, I think, from 343's side of the house, where the product that they put out didn't really meet it. It was received well at the beginning, but then once people were actually able to play it and analyze it, that's when true feelings of the game came out, and that's where 343's been slowly backing off, and they finally came to a point where it was like, yeah, okay, we made some mistakes in here.
Yeah,
and at least they're admitting what they did with Halo and during the development process wasn't the best way to go about it. And some would even just go further and say that was stupid of them, even still. it's this weird balance of how much blame do you put on 343 and where do you put the blame on? Because, like you said before, they are a new studio. They are trying to pull together the first time this massive undertaking that is Halo. But in the opposite hand, you have the fact that Halo is a AAA title that's already well established, had a fantastic developer behind it for its first 10 years. And you expect this new studio to come and make something that was as good as that? That's a long shot in the dark for a new studio to come out and make a brilliant game that's as good as the established franchise. And
well, yeah, I mean,
everyone thought that they had the potential to do it. And if you take a look back and think about it, it's just there was almost no chance that they actually would have been able to deliver on that kind of a promise that they would be able to pull Halo out and really make it shine on their first actual developed game. Halo Anniversary doesn't count. There's a lot of that base was already there. It's basically just a reskin. They did some networking code to make the co-op work, but that doesn't count as really a game, a full game development where Halo 4 was built from the ground up.
Yeah.
So it's, for me, it's this weird tug of war where how much can I really blame 343 for making the product that they made because they are a new studio, but then again, it's Halo. Why are you going to mess up Halo? Why are you going to mess with the thing that I love the most?
Yeah. Going back to that, we'll get to kind of our episode's namesake, that quote.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll go ahead and read it off. It's during that time you're questioning yourself, how is this going to work? Will it be as I envision in my head, says Holmes. For Halo 4, he says there were a few epiphany moments that helped boost the morale of the team. One of the earlier ones that Holmes recalls was when the team completed a small piece of the Halo experience that he described as a very traditional Halo. User research showed that people thought it was a lot of fun, and it showed that the team was capable of making a Halo game that was true to what the series was about. 343 scrapped it, Holmes says, as it was too traditional. But that first build showed that the new team that this amalgamation of different studio cultures could work together and achieve a common goal. It's just
probably
the idea
new
that
build.
They came up. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
The idea that they made this build that people enjoyed, and it was, you know, very traditional Halo, and then they just decided to scrap it, like, just whatever, like...
Yeah, it's... The fact that you would scrap something like that, though, is just... It doesn't... Why... I get that you want to make new things for the franchise. I get that you want to really... put your own mark on Halo, but when you're trying to make it to where the experience is going to be accepted by everybody, why alter that formula? Why, I don't know, just doesn't quite make sense.
So the idea that you would scrap a traditional Halo experience is kind of offensive to some people.
Yeah.
I've never heard of somebody like getting, you know, a focus group together, you know, making them play a build. They enjoy it. And then like, you know, even though you enjoyed this thing, we're just getting rid of it. Just scrap it. Like, don't want it.
I, why would you do that? Why in your right mind, especially making your first game in an established franchise, why would you take something that, you know, people are going to enjoy for the first time, play your cards in a way where you're going to be a little bit more on the safe side since you're a brand new studio, and make that experience that people are going to be familiar with at least, because Call of Duty does it all the time and they have millions of people coming back to play it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. They don't really go into the mindset behind that. It's kind of a passing quote, which makes it even more infuriating, because you read how, like, they build this traditional Halo for an entire paragraph, and then the first sentence of the next paragraph says, 343 scrapped it. It's just, I mean, it's such a kind of a breakneck change in the tone of your article.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Moving on to this kind of last quote that got people mad. It's all very personal. Whether you're getting great feedback and seeing how people are loving the game or seeing the criticisms about the game, Holmes says. It's something in which you really pour your heart and your soul into. so you care very deeply about what the feedback is. As a general rule, we try not to overreact to the loud vocal minority. So basically, they like feedback except from you. They like feedback except when they get it.
The negative voice of the internet, that's...
Yeah. Those people who play your game nonstop, hours on end, every day on Xbox Live, don't want to listen to those guys because they're just... They're the loud vocal minority. Okay.
I guess.
So I don't know. It was kind of a aggravating article for fans of the Halo franchise that have maybe been jaded by Halo 4.
It just seems like they made some boneheaded decisions.
Yeah.
When putting the teams together and developing the game. And it just sucks that they had to do it with Halo.
Yeah.
I mean I think for Halo, it's one of those games where it's really close and dear to a lot of the core audience. And I really don't have any authority to say this for any of the other communities, but I think for like Call of Duty, it's a lot more of a general acceptance of it's a game that people like to play, but there's no real like core community that's really, really passionate about what the game is and what it means to them. I think Halo was done in such a way where it fosters that kind of community because you see all these different aspects of Halo being pulled into this greater community. You have things like Machinima. You have things like custom maps and custom game types. You have people making weapon replicas for Halo. You have people making full-on Spartan costumes. There are other games that foster that kind of thing, but Halo, I think, is almost in a unique position where it encompasses a vast array of different communities, and it has the ability to foster those communities in the greater whole of the Halo fan base. And whenever you have people being brought together in a studio that don't like Halo, or the teams didn't really have a clear focus on what they were doing, they didn't have clear guidelines from the beginning, they weren't necessarily managed the best. It's while they may have had good intentions to begin with, it's almost kind of like a slap in the face to Halo. And I know people from 343 listen to this. I don't mean any disrespect in that. It's just that we're really passionate about the game and what Halo means to us. And frankly, we kind of agree with the greater Halo population that some of the decisions that were made don't really make sense and weren't the best for this franchise that we know and love.
Yeah.
And we understand that it's a new studio. Things are always rough to start out with, but you have to be careful with something that's already well established that you don't mess with things too much. And 343 messed with Halo in a way that a lot of drastic changes were undertaken in Halo. A lot of things are different from what people remember in past Halo games. It's definitely not a Halo 2. It's definitely not a Halo 3 type of game where people were passionate about the multiplayer and really gelled with the story. They need to really be careful with what they do with Halo 5.
Yeah.
I think they're being very open to what people have to say. I think they're taking the feedback, and I'm sure they have good intentions on what they want to do with Halo 5, but I think they really need to be careful with what they do, how they do it, making sure that they have clear goals to start out with. They need to have a beta for Halo 5. They absolutely have to have one for Halo 5. Because for Halo 4 is not widely accepted. The numbers for Halo 4 plummeted pretty quickly, and they have spiked for the DLC maps, but after about a week or so, they dropped pretty drastically.
Yeah. So I mean, it's
no longer the Bungie following. You don't have that Bungie core set in there. Because the Bungie fans, they're still interested in Halo, but I don't think you see as many of the Bungie fans getting Halo now. And you'll probably see a lot converge over to Destiny. So you're already losing a good corner of that market. It's something that's just a combination of unfortunate timing, just the series of events that led up to it, and frankly, it just kind of sucks. There's not much more we can say to it other than what we just talked about. But this article kind of sums up, I think, a lot of people's fears of what 343 was going to do with the Halo franchise. And from this point on, we just have to... It's going to require a lot of trust in 343, and I don't think there's a lot of that right now.
Well, I think on 343's part, it's going to require a change in development attitude.
That they're going
to have to really take into account what the vocal minority said about this article. You know, all the complaints they had about these quotes, and then think about them for a while and say, did any of this stuff gather a lot of new players into the game? And how many players did we lose because of this stuff? You know, I mean, I can assume that they probably lost more fans than they gained with Halo 4. And I'm not saying they lost a bunch of fans. I'm just saying they probably didn't gain a whole bunch of fans either. If you liked Halo, you played Halo 4. I don't see a whole lot of people jumping into the Halo franchise with Halo 4. I feel bad for you if you did. mostly just kind of change your attitude when developing Halo 5. Kind of spend more time thinking about how can we make this game like Halo 1 and 2 and less time thinking about how we can make this game like Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. Just stuff like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, you know, I don't want to sound like we're just hating on 343. I mean, this was a problem mainly because people were not offended, just kind of rattled by these quotes. And then it's a learning opportunity. This is a good chance for 343 to get some feedback as to why do fans not like Halo 4 as much as they would like them to like it. And hopefully this will kind of be a wake-up call to them, maybe. I blame a lot of the problems with Halo 4 on, first of all, Microsoft having much more control over 343 than they did Bungie. You know, Bungie existed as a studio before Microsoft bought them out, so they kind of had their own culture. 343 was built by Microsoft themselves, you know. I mean, Microsoft is the big daddy in that relationship, you know. I mean, Microsoft gets what Microsoft wants, and 343 doesn't have any say. I mean, as far as the individual, you know, creative directors and executives at that studio, I mean, they don't get as much say as possibly Bungie did. Bungie seems like, I mean, there have been cases where they completely said to Microsoft, hey, I mean, you want this thing in Halo, but we don't want to do it that way. One thing I was reading was Bungie said that they didn't want to subdue the color of the ghosts. Like Microsoft was telling Bungie that they thought the ghost was too purple. They needed to subdue their colors. You kind of see that a little bit in Reach, but I mean, even throughout Halo 3, like, they kept those colors real bright and popping. And nowadays, I mean, in video games, people love those bright colors. BioShock Infinite, as far as the aesthetics of that game, people love it because it's colorful and it's bright. And I think that was, you know, at the time, kind of something that separated Halo from other first-person shooters at the time. Just the aesthetics of it. I remember when Halo 3 first came out, people were saying, oh, it just looks like Halo 2. You know, it just looks like an original Xbox game. I mean, it obviously didn't when you saw the comparison shots, but I mean, it was just a very specific aesthetic choice that Bungie had. I mean, Halo had its own style. And then they show that, you know, 343 kind of subdued those colors when they got Halo 4, which it kind of brought people to think maybe Microsoft finally got what it wanted. You know, Bungie's gone, so now Microsoft told the new studio, hey, subdue these colors, and so they, you know, just subdued them a little bit. Personally, I think Halo 4 is more colorful than Reach. But, I mean, you can definitely see that it's not like a bright purple in the Halo 4 Ghost. It's very it's very deep, dark purple.
Yeah, I personally, I mean, the one thing I like about Halo 4 is the graphics. I think it is definitely a pretty Halo game. That doesn't make up for all of its shortcomings, though. Not by any stretch of the imagination.
Halo fan asked if I was drunk. So maybe I'm thinking about the wrong ghost. I'm just basing this off the pictures I saw in NeoGAF. Maybe I read that thread wrong. So maybe the ghosts in Halo 4 aren't as dark as I think they are. But it's just the idea that Microsoft has more control over that studio than they had Bungie. And that's the only problem I got.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's other just than that, they're a new studio. They had to build themselves up. They had a very short time frame to make a AAA game. So I am compelled to give 343 a pass on Halo 4. And, I mean, it's not a bad game by any stretch of the imagination. It just wasn't up to the expectations of players as far as wanting a Halo game like Bungie makes them.
Yeah.
Now that they are a fully realized studio, I expect more out of them. And I expect Halo 5 to be pretty substantially better than Halo 4.
I hope it is.
Having learned all of the lessons that they've learned over the past year, I can only expect Halo 5 will be a better game.
Yeah, I think it will be. Again, it's all up. It's all on their side now. They have to listen to the community. They have to be willing to go back to what the core fundamentals of Halo were and really nail those down before adding their own twist on things, before putting... I mean, it's nice to put your own pieces into the greater puzzle, but they need to go back to what that core set was before they add those pieces on there. They need to rebuild that core of Halo that kind of crumpled under the weight of having a new studio come and put Halo under their wings.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that pretty much sums up the article. Lots of different things to think about in terms of the future of Halo, where the franchise is going. 343 has a lot of responsibility now to make the game that people want to see. They have a pass, at least in our books. I know there's some people out there who are kind of pissed at 343 right now, and they're stepping away from Halo, but I think for the most part, people have recognized that 343 is a new studio. Not everyone's perfect, but they cannot put something like this out for Halo 5. Yeah. If they do, Halo is in deep trouble.
I think that they definitely understand the problems that people have with Halo 4. I can't say whether or not they're too stubborn to change them, but they definitely know what they need to change to make it better. But it's just up to them to make those changes in Halo 5.
Yeah. Well, I think that's it. I think that awkward silence just kind of sums up that we're done talking about this. If you guys have not read the article, definitely encourage you to go read it. We're going to put a link in the description with this episode on our website where you can go and read the article for yourself. It's something I think everyone who is passionate about Halo that is still willing to hold it out for Halo should go read. At least they're being open and honest with us. At least they've admitted that they got some things wrong and they're willing to listen to community feedback. And we've already seen that they're listening by ways of what they've done with the title update, with the CSR, with what they did with the second half of Spartan Ops. So we know they're listening. And we know that they have good intentions, but at the end of the day, it takes the community and feedback from the community to really push the studio. So go read this. Please educate yourself on what the article has to say. Establish your own feelings for the Halo franchise and go post on the Waypoint forums. Go tell 343 what you truly think and be honest. Be critical. Don't be condemning or trying to put anyone down. Be constructive. Be critical. And that's the best way to make change happen for the game that we know and love.
Yeah. I think the big takeaway here is that Halo 4 would have been a much better game if me and Dustin were working at 343 right now. So if you want to make Halo 5 a better game, it's just like Halo Fan for Life says. He says, God, give me a shot at working there, please. Like, if you can just give all three of us a job working at 343, we promise that Halo 5 will be the most beloved Halo game in the entire franchise. 100% guaranteed.
Yeah, but that's just for us.
No, I mean for everybody. It guaranteed. Like, you put us on there, like, everybody will love that game. They're going to be like, this is a true return to form.
do we have the support of the greater Halo community?
Yes, I'm sure
we do. You sure? I wonder what the chat has to say about that.
Well, I mean, think about it. Like, if you had a point, like, after some of the stuff they said in that article, like, I'm sure they would put us in over Josh Holmes, like, right now. Like, I'm joking. I don't know. I'm sure Josh Holmes is an all right dude. I feel for Ryan Patton. He was originally the creative director at 343. He quit halfway through Halo 4's development, saying that he just didn't feel that Halo 4 was going creatively in the direction that he wanted it to. Halo Fan for Life was mentioning that earlier in the chat, like way earlier. But I remember Ryan Patton from his 1UP days. It seems like a lot of people that worked for 1UP or EGM in general ended up working for Halo in some fashion. This Lukeums, Luke Smith, he was originally from EGM and 1UP. He went on to work for Bungie, but he stayed with Bungie. Ryan Patton's the only one I can think of other than him. Just off the top of my head, but I don't know.
Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you for tuning in for this episode. We hope you guys were able to get some valuable information out of this. Please go read the article if you haven't done so already. I think it's an important read for everyone who calls themselves a Halo fan. So definitely go and read the article. I'm just going to skip the outro bits. I mean, I'll hit on the big ones. Follow our social networks. Find us on podtacular.com. If there's anything that you have comments on, questions about anything in this article, please send it over our way. We will talk about it on the next show on Thursday. If you have any questions about what was in the article, we'll research it and try to get some answers for you. So, with that said, everybody, enjoy the game for what it is. Support Halo by giving constructive feedback. That's the best thing that we can do right now. Go to the Waypoint forums, give your true and honest opinion, being critical but not condemning. That's the best way to make change happen for Halo. All right, we're done for the night, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Again, this has been episode 354. Thursday, we will, of course, be doing our regular live stream show for the Waypoint Bulletin. And it'll be episode 365, where you can listen to one episode per day for a year.
Yay.
Yay. So on behalf of myself and Brent Gamer, again, thank you very, very much, and keep on fragging those trucks.
Keep on fragging Gamasutra interviews.